Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. A city of Dwarkapuri was filled with opulences of all seasons. There were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks and reservoirs of water, breeding lotus flowers all over. Purport. Perfection of human civilization is made possible by utilizing the gifts of nature in their own way. As we find herewith, in the description of its opulence, Dwarka was surrounded by flower gardens and fruit orchards, along with reservoirs of water and growing lotuses. There is no mention of mills and factories supported by slaughterhouses, which are the necessary paraphernalia of the modern metropolis. The propensity to utilize nature's own gifts is still there, even in the heart of modern civilized man. The leaders of modern civilization select their own residential quarters in a place where there are such naturally beautiful gardens and reservoirs of water, but they leave the common men to reside in congested areas without parks and gardens. Herein, of course, we find a different description of the city of Dwarka. It is understood that the whole dam or residential quarter was surrounded by such gardens and parks with reservoirs of water where lotuses grew. It is understood that all the people depended on nature's gifts of fruits and flowers without industrial enterprises promoting filthy huts and slums for residential quarters. Advancement of civilization is estimated not on the growth of mills and factories to deteriorate the finer instincts of the human being, but on developing the potent spiritual instincts of human beings and giving them a chance to go back to Godhead. Development of factories and mills is called ugra karma, or pungent activities. And such activities deteriorate the finer sentiments of the human being and society to form a dungeon of demons. Prabhupada's amazing the way he puts words. We find herein the mention of pious trees which produce seasonal flowers and fruits. The impious trees are useless jungles only, and can only be used to supply fuels. In the modern civilization, such impious trees are planted on the sides of roads. Human energy should be properly utilized in developing the finer senses for spiritual understanding, in which lies the solution of life. Fruits, flowers, beautiful gardens, parks, and reservoirs of water, with ducks and swans playing in the midst of lotus flowers, and cows giving sufficient milk and butter, are essential for developing the finer tissues of the human body. As against this, the dungeons of mines and factories and workshops develop demoniac propensities in the working class. The vested interests flourish at the cost of the working class, and consequently there are severe clashes between them in so many ways. The description of Dwarka Dham is the ideal human civilization. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Somritam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shimati Shivaram Swami Itiramine. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Itiramine. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nivaje Sunivari Pastichade Satarine Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasti Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Vancha Gaupa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vya Vaja Patita Nam Pavena Vya Vaishna Vya Namo Namaha. Right. So this chapter is all about when Krishna enters Dwarka. And the whole chapter is describing the opulence of Dwarkapuri, how opulent Dwarka is. And this verse here continues that. And it's describing how Dwarka was filled with beautiful gardens and parks and reservoirs of water, lotuses and swans. And when you hear about this, it immediately makes the mind feel peaceful, doesn't it? Yeah? We just sit and meditate, and you read this. But in the purport, Srila Prabhupada's given a comparison, the reality of what things are really like in Kali Yuga. Factories and mills and slaughterhouses, and this is the reality, actually, unfortunately for us. I remember when I first went to Calcutta, we were brahmacharis. Well, we was on our way to Mayapur, and I don't know if those who've been to Mayapur, you've got to stop in Calcutta. And we went out, we took a taxi. And it was my first time in India, actually, for many, many years, since I was a child. And I was shocked. I don't know if anyone's been under Harwa Bridge. You must have, right? So you can see the situation there. It's just basically just a slum. People living under the bridge in cardboard boxes. And I was really shocked. But after a while, when you've been in India for a few weeks, you get used to it. before the British came to India, actually, there was none of this slums, what you see in Calcutta and Delhi. India was mainly just villages. People lived a simple life. Prabhupada said if someone wanted a knife, you would go to the blacksmith and you would present them with a piece of metal and say, I want a knife. And they will make you a knife. And these days, you have to jump into your car and go to the local B&Q and look at hundreds and hundreds of knives and you get completely bewildered. That's modern society for you. But the British came to India and they... actually, the first British that came, they were amazed at what they saw. They saw so much opulence. People were eating with gold cutlery and plates and just... It was so opulent. And this guy, he went back to the British government. He was like a spy. And he told the government what he saw, and they were amazed. So they come up with this plan on how to bring India down, or how to get the Indians under their control. And it was basically to break the infrastructure, because they couldn't bribe the Indians, because the Indians were already so opulent, so happy with their lives. So they had to come up with an idea of how to completely break the whole system of village living and get them out of the cities and introduce industry. So that's what the British did. Prabhupada said the Industrial Revolution was the evolution of sudras, because industry and technology, it basically numbs one's intelligence. And this way it increases the propensity to want to enjoy this material world. So it increases the sudra population on the planet. And there's nothing wrong with being a sudra. It's perfectly fine. But when there's an imbalance in society, when there are no brahminical class, there are no kshatriyas in Kali Yuga, and basically the whole planet is run by Vaishyas and Sudras. And the Vaishyas, their aim is to accumulate money to enjoy sense gratification. And according to this purport, Srila Prabhupada says they abuse the working class people like this. But themselves, they're living in opulence. They live... The wealthy people, you always see them in very nice areas, in Surrey, right? Mission Brunos. We've ever done door to door Sankirtan, or have you ever selling things door to door? You know the areas to go to, and you see these beautiful areas. They're always surrounded by trees, and the roads are really wide, and the houses are huge. So this is where they've chosen to live themselves. But whereas the working class, those people that they abuse, they have to live in a lot more congested, suffocating areas. And Prabhupada says that this type of living, it deteriorates the finer sentiments of the human being. In other words, it takes away one's desire to want to learn higher things, to learn spiritual life, to develop one's Krishna consciousness. And what it does, it totally suffocates one's intelligence. So there is no desire, as you can see in the planet, in the world today. People's main interest is sense gratification, how to get as much money as possible. But unfortunately, most people have become slaves in this world. And the result is that in their next life, they will have a very difficult situation. Once Prabhupada was on a morning walk, and they come to a big house, and Prabhupada stopped and he pointed with his cane. He pointed to the door and he said, "Oh," he said, "look how nice that door is, such a beautiful door." He said, "We don't have doors like this in India." And then he pointed to the rest of the garden, the fence and everything. He said, "Such a nice, so beautiful plants outside, everything." And he said, but the owner, in his next life, he will become a dog. You can see sometimes, especially in Europe, people keep dogs outside in the garden. And when you walk past the house, the dog barks. In their last life, they were living in the house, and then they come back as a dog, and now when someone walks past, they're barking, saying, "Get out of my house." But it's like they're in the body of a dog. So this is the unfortunate future of these people. So the modern world actually it creates fear. This type of negative living that Srila Prabhupada describes in the verse, in the purport, it creates fear within the living entity. And you can see people are very fearful. They're fearful they're going to lose their job. They're fearful they're going to lose their house. They're fearful how am I going to maintain myself? But this is all artificial maintenance. Because people are depending on artificial things, depending on electricity, that can be cut off. So many things can happen, the water can be cut off. So the society is full of fear. But Vedic culture is completely different. And the fear, it also breeds an impersonal atmosphere. Because one of Maya's energies is, Shakti. One of her Shaktis is that she covers the living entity. So this type of living, this covers the living entity more and more and more. So they become further and further and further away from Krishna. And you can see the society is more and more impersonal. People don't speak to each other. Very rarely will you speak to your neighbor these days. They might come knocking on your door to complain about you put the wheelie bin outside their door or something. Or you might just get a, "All right, mate," as in England they say, right? Once a year during Christmas you might get a card or something. So this is the this way of living. It creates this impersonal nature within people. I've got my life, you've got yours, and that's it. Whereas in Vedic times, people would live within the family, the extended family, the grandparents and everyone. Everyone would be there. Things would be nicer. So there's a verse in the Bhagavatam, Atapumbir Dvizashtrestha. Vana Ashvam Vibhagasa Svanustitasya Dhamasya Samsadi Hari Dorshanam. The best of the twice born is therefore concluded that the highest perfection that one can achieve by carrying out his prescribed duties according to the different castes and divisions in society is to please the Supreme Lord Hari. So Samsadi Hari Dorshanam, this is the main point, that we have to please Krishna. Once Prabhupada was in a room conversation, and there was some intelligent people, I don't know who they were, university teachers in the audience, and they were speaking about humanity. Prabhupada stopped them. He said, what do you know about humanity? You speak about humanity, but you're sending the poor cows to the slaughterhouse. And then he said, if you love God, then you won't even harm even a small, tiny insect. This is pure love. Prabhupada said this is proper love. Because the devotee understands, Aham Savasya Prabhava, Krishna is the source. Everything is coming from Krishna. Everything. It's material, everything is spiritual. Mataha Sarvam Pavartate. Everything emanates from me. So therefore, a devotee understands this point, and he won't even harm a small, tiny insect. Sometimes during japa, you see devotees on the floor, and you think, what are they doing? And they're usually like getting a little insect and throwing it out the window so no one squashes it. So that's, you know, that's being conscious. That's being Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said if you become Krishna conscious, then you automatically you will become a vegetarian. That's why we don't really preach about vegetarianism separately, do we? You just preach about becoming Krishna conscious. You preach to people about Krishna, and automatically everything else will happen because Krishna, everything comes from Krishna. And Krishna is all pure. He's like the sun. As soon as the sun comes up, so many things go away. So that's the main point, to develop Krishna consciousness. And then this type of world we live in will slowly become purified. So life is meant for tapa, divyam, tapasya, to understand Krishna. So unfortunately technology and industrial enterprises, they're teaching us how to, you don't need to practice austerity, you don't need to get up early, have a shower, you don't need to do these things. You know, life is made so comfortable that, you know, technology is doing everything for you. Right? These days, everyone's on their phones. You go to a bus stop, there's nine people standing at a bus stop. I can guarantee you nine of them be on their phones, you know? So, it's a fact, right? It's you go anywhere in a public place, station, train station or bus station, they all, you see five people sitting down, they'll all be on their mobile phones. And I've got my mobile phone. But we as devotees, we use technology in a good, in Krishna's service. So this technology, it numbs the intelligence. People don't communicate anymore. They become impersonal. It's impersonalism. You don't need to communicate. Years ago, you're standing at a bus stop, someone would start speaking to you. Nice, you know, oh, how are you doing? Nice weather. These days, nothing. They will. So, you know, what's on Facebook? Let me see how many likes I've got. Don't like that. So, yeah. But life is meant for tapasya, to understand the Supreme. You know, just getting up early in the morning, having a shower, coming to the temple, or getting up and doing your puja and chanting your rounds, that's tapasya. Following the regs, that's tapasya. Reading Srila Prabhupada's books, that's tapasya. But who's doing that in the world these days? Who's doing tapasya? No one. So in this way, the closer we become to nature, Prabhupada said, all you need is a cow and a bit of land and your economic problem is solved. You know, why do we need to depend on all these? Therefore, Varnashram is very important. I think one devotee mentioned yesterday, he was reading his offering to Prabhupada, and I forgot his name, American devotee. And he was saying that Prabhupada gave us 50%. And he said, the other 50% I leave to you. And Prabhupada was talking about Varnashram. That 50% is Varnashram. Because unless we establish Varnashram correctly, then people, they will not come to Krishna consciousness the way we would like them to come. Because Krishna consciousness means to completely change your whole way of life. It's not a part-time religion. It's not going to the church once a week or, you know, once a month. People are fed up with this. They've had enough of this. So we need to give them an alternative way of life. And that's Varnashram. But it's happening slowly, slowly. So the question comes, well, what do we do in the time being? Because there's no Varnashram, hardly. You know, we're living in this material world. We're living in England. Most devotees have to work. They have to get a job. They have to interact with society outside. So, and the question comes up quite often, what do you, you know, how do we deal with that? So the point is, if we put Krishna in the center of our life and Krishna as the goal of our life, then sense gratification will not be the sense center, and sense gratification won't become the goal. It'll be Krishna, right? So instead of going for that higher pay rise or higher position, devotees should be thinking, they should have a plan, a long-term plan on how I can slowly, slowly renounce this material world, but at the same time continue my duty working, because everyone has to work. For a perfect society to function, you have to have doctors, nurses, you have to have carpenters, plumbers, engineers, even lawyers. Right? You have to have these. So as devotees, Krishna doesn't say stop everything and just move in the temple. We're living in this world, we have to, but we have to be careful that we don't make sense gratification our goal and keep Krishna as our goal. And in this way, we slowly, slowly, slowly become purified from the desire to want to enjoy this material world. And then we will come to the point of renunciation. Because if you think about it, the four ashrams, only one ashram allows limited sense gratification. The other three are all renunciation. So therefore, you can understand how important renunciation is. You know, people in the material world, they're very good at forming goals, material goals for themselves. When you go on the internet, there's so many coaches, you know, this coach and that coach. I can, you know, if you read my book, I can show you how you can make $50,000 in 1 month. So many, it's all over the internet, right? So they have so many goals. Remember, devotees, as devotees, we should have our own goals, and those goals should be based around how I can slowly renounce this material world and come to the point of just being engaged in Krishna's service full time. Because we have to all come to that point sometime in our life. So this, the beginning of this chapter, we heard about Krishna just before he entered Dwarka. He blew his conch and he attracted all the living entities. They all came out of Dwarka Puri because Krishna wanted to see them. And Krishna in Vrindavan, he does the same thing. When he gets up in the morning, he goes to Nanda Maharaj's courtyard and he blows his transcendental cow horn. And all the gopas, they hear Krishna's cow horn and they all come running out of their houses. And he said that there's millions of gopas and there's more calves than even gopas. And they all managed to get into Nanda Maharaj's courtyard somehow. But by the nice arrangement of Yoga Maya. And even though there are so many of them, millions and millions of them, each one of them has a personal relationship with Krishna. Just like there's only a few of them. So we can all develop this personal relationship with Krishna. So in Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya has come, or Krishna has come in the form of Lord Chaitanya. And he's not blowing his conch or his cow horn. What is he doing? He's chanting the holy name. And he's attracting people again, because Krishna wants people to come to him. He's attracting people just by chanting the holy name. They are coming to him. Just like when we go out and preaching, when we go out and book distribution, we can see how people, how much they actually appreciate Prabhupada's books, you know. Many years ago, I was distributing, this story, it happened many years ago, but this is the most distinctive exchange I've had with someone in my life. And I always remember it. There was one girl, I gave her a book, and she, as soon as she saw a picture of Prabhupada, she said, I dreamt of this. I had a dream of him recently. And so I understood that she had already received the book somewhere in the past. And she said he was really tall. Prabhupada wasn't tall, he was small. But I could understand that Prabhupada was showing her, by being tall in her dream, he was showing her his potency. And then she said he touched him on the chin like this. He touched her on the chin like a grandfather would touch a grandchild. So amazing, isn't it? Huh? And then soon after this dream, she started to chant. But she said, there's a problem, because every time I chant, I can't stop laughing. So, I didn't know what to say. She should come to the morning program and see some real... Have you seen someone walking, sleeping and chanting at the same time? Anyway, that was going to my mind. So I said to her, it's okay. I said, it's normal. The reason why you can't stop laughing while you're chanting is because you're getting relief from all your material stress and anxiety, and because it's been so long since you've come in contact with this mantra. Just like when a child loses his mother, he's crying, but when he sees his mother, he starts to laugh. Or he might be crying and laughing at the same time. So the Maha Mantra is like our mother, it's like our father. So she's experiencing this. So I always remember this exchange I had with this girl. It was amazing how she was appreciating the Maha Mantra. She was appreciating Prabhupada so much that she dreamt of him. Yeah, so... So we need to develop higher qualities in life, spiritual qualities, brahminical qualities. We need to come to the mode of goodness, and then we can keep the material energy away from us. I think I'll stop here. So, are there any questions or comments? Yes.